Around Christmas one year at Fraser Mennonite, I remember our then pastor, Jason Cunningholm, sharing a question that pastors often ask themselves when preaching a well-known passage. What new can be said about Christmas, he said that morning. You all know this story as well as I do. What can I possibly add? I had to admit I feel a little bit that way as I was preparing for today. Not all of us, but some of us, grew up memorizing Bible verses, doing Bible quizzing, and attending and taking turns leading countless Bible studies. For those of you with that background, and I include myself there, it can be easy to feel like we've heard it all before, and it can be hard to encounter scripture stories in a fresh way. Another challenge is that those who pass the faith on to us sometimes focused attention on things that weren't particularly interesting or even very helpful. They did what Dave likes to call putting the emphasis on the wrong syllable. One Sunday when I was about 9, I remember my junior church teacher asking, which is more important, Christmas or Easter? I was a Sunday school kid, and I knew the answer he wanted was Easter because of Jesus' resurrection. But my fourth grade sensibilities made me adamantly disagree. Christmas, I argued, using concrete sequential logic. After all, no Christmas, no Easter, right? As we've traveled through Lent this year, Susan and Worship Committee have invited us to engage with very more interesting questions than which is more important, Christmas or Easter. Their challenging and helpful prompt was printed in our bulletins. It read, "For those who have been on sometimes decades-long Lenten journeys of picking out the chaff we have been handed in faith and community, we turn this Lent to the wheat. We focus on what we hold on to rather than what we lay aside. What is the faith we long to say yes to? Who is the God we long to follow?" We leaned in and engaged these questions in a number of ways over the last few weeks. Artists in the congregation created these original pieces of artwork that have hung around us, surrounding us during worship. A couple different Lent reflection groups met in the Parrot Gallery during these weeks. 29 different writers from this congregation shared lectionary text reflections that were sent out to all via email. A couple of us met to read the Easter text for today, and during Adult Christian Ed last week, a small group of us met to talk about what Easter means to us. In addition, I'm aware that this morning we gather as individuals who each bring our own stories. Our souls cry out with whatever we bring with us this morning. We may be rejoicing at the evidence of spring everywhere. We may be distracted by dinner plans. We may be carrying doubts or skepticism, weighed down by grief, filled with fear, despairing in search of something on which to build our lives. Surprised by unexpected hope, seeking healing, desiring growth, anticipating something new, yearning to encounter the holy. We come bringing our own mix of recent experiences, trauma histories, passing thoughts, and deep feelings. For various reasons, some of us may be resisting the Easter story, while others may be feeling drawn to move closer to it this year. We come as we are, and we bring what we bring. What was so interesting to me when I read the story from Luke is the cast of characters we find there. It's another group of people with their own mix of personal experiences, recent traumas, thoughts and feelings. They're also trying to figure out the events of what we now call Holy Week, but they're trying to do it in real time, and they're all over the place. They're asking the kinds of questions that invite my attention. What just happened? How does this fit with what we thought before? And what in the world might it all mean for us now? It seems that Jesus' earliest followers are grappling with wheat and chaff questions of their own. What meaning are they to take from Jesus' crucifixion and the reports of his resurrection? Given all they've experienced, witnessed, and heard, what are they going to hold on to? And where do they go together from here? As we consider their familiar story once again, what wheat might we glean from the account of those who were there? Might the Spirit use their story to grow fresh blades of a living faith in us and open our eyes anew to God's action in the world through the bread of life? Now, there's two lectionary texts that are offered for this morning. One's from John 20, and the other's the passage from Luke 24 that Jerry read. The writers of these two books amuse me, because just like two friends who attended the same event, they're telling about it with striking differences in their accounts. Luke lists a group of women who went there: Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women. While John says it was only Mary who went to the tomb that morning. Luke remembers Peter running to the tomb alone and finding the burial cloths, while John says that it was Peter and the disciple who Jesus loved who heard Mary's story and went to check it out. John loves to include lots of tiny details: how the other disciple outran Peter but did not go in right away, how Peter went in first and found the linen wrappings, and how the cloth that was on Jesus' head was wrapped up to the side by itself. After his brutal death by crucifixion, Jesus left a band of shaken followers, grieving mourners, and uncertain people filled with fear. I was particularly drawn to the Luke story this morning because of these different characters and their unsurprising, remarkable mix of responses to the news that the stone in front of the tomb had been rolled away and Jesus' body is gone. We read that the women are initially perplexed and then terrified. After being reminded of Jesus' earlier words, their grief, fear, and shock turns into eager witness to the apostles. The completely unexpected has happened. But their story is largely met with skepticism and disbelief. I love verse 9. These words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. I didn't remember that from previous readings. In Peter, however, a tentative faith opens. Could this be true? What might this mean? And he runs toward the scene of the tomb for himself. He wants a firsthand experience of it. Seeing the empty tomb, he stoops and looks in, and then in stunned wonder, he returns home, still processing it all. Many of Jesus' own followers struggle to accept and make sense of his death and resurrection, and we are still grappling with it all these years later. What I love about Peter's response is that he is curious and open. Despite having denied even knowing Jesus just days earlier, now he runs towards the story, seeking a firsthand experience of it. We know that he later goes on to live the rest of his life joining God's work in the world and bearing witness to Jesus Christ. Might we learn from Peter's response and stay curious and open to the mystery of the Easter morning story? And in response, might our lives cry out with life-giving witness to God's desired shalom for us, first of all, and then for all. In his book, Shalom, the Bible's word for salvation, justice, and peace, Perry B. Yoder argues forcefully that Jesus' birth life, teachings, death, and resurrection can only be fully understood in the context of God's big work of shalom. All things as they should be in us and in all creation. Jesus didn't come simply to die for human sin, which may have been the emphasis some of us heard growing up as children. From Yoder's perspective, Jesus Christ is a hard no to evil and a dramatic yes to God's shalom project of salvation, justice, and peace in both the personal and the systemic sense. This is a big, big vision. Gabriel announces Jesus' birth to Mary, saying that his kingdom shall have no end, a clear witness to the hope for a messianic figure, whose reign will be marked by shalom justice, just as the prophets envisioned. Mary responds by bursting into joyful song. My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. He has scattered the proud in the thoughts of their hearts. He has brought down the powerful from their thrones and lifted up the lowly. He has filled the hungry with good things. Jesus himself confirms these words by beginning his ministry by reading Isaiah 61. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he's anointed me to bring good news to the poor, to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free. His continued challenge of the status quo threatened religious and political leaders so much that they decided to crucify him. Jesus turned away from the option of violently forcing his shalom agenda, instead choosing to put himself forever on the side of all who experience suffering. His resurrection was God's message that love is always greater than death. In response, we're called to pour out our lives as a life-giving witness, joining God at work in the world in ways that stretch on and on and on. The four lines of the reed cross depicted in the banner Jan Stolzfus made beautifully illustrate this. The four trajectories extending out from the cross, heading north, south, east, and west, remind me of so many different ways that we can join God's work of shalom around the world and in our neighborhoods and our own individual lives too. Some here have participated in relief, development, and peace work in the name of Christ through organizations like Mennonite Central Committee. Some have responded in Christian love to those affected by disasters in Canada and the U.S. through Mennonite Disaster Service. Many of us here give to the budget at CMCL and so help ensure that this building itself is a place of reconciliation, an inviting and safe place for us and many others in the community to gather, a Spanish language congregation, groups of people fighting addiction, kids in foster care wanting to visit with their birth parents, folks who just like to get together and sing. In our work lives, many of us serve as teachers, nurses, dietitians, social workers, doctors, and counselors, bringing healing and hope in our work lives. Some of us offer caring before school program here at Mornings on Orange Street for families living right near our church building who struggle financially. Some of us volunteer as mentors and tutors at Fulton Elementary or other schools. Others serve as peacemakers at work, at church, and at home. Some care for frail family members. Some sing for dear friends in their last hours. As Annie Dillard says, how we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. What we do with this hour and that one is what we are doing. We could go on and on naming ways we are or can bear witness to the birth, life, teachings, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. These examples are spending the hours and days of our lives crying out with this kind of witness in the world. And seeing these examples strengthens my faith at Easter and throughout the year and causes me to cry out in praise. This is the God I want to follow. This is the kind of faith I long to say yes to. In closing, let's join together in singing My Soul Cries Out, Mary's Song of Praise. I know it's Easter, and I promise I'm not trying to have the last word with that junior high church teacher from years ago, but Mary glimpsed God's big mission from the start, and she knew she had a part to play. So let's echo her words in praise and celebration. May our souls cry out with praise. Thank you.